Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is NIGC Chairman Sequoia Simmermeyer. Chairman, thanks for joining us. It's an honor to meet with you here.
No, thank you, Mr. Gross. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's Roger, not...
Okay, Roger, thank you.
Mr. Gross is my father.
Thanks, Roger.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's really fun to see people here at the NIGA Trade Show again and hooking up with people. And how has the show been for you so far?
It's been great. It's been exciting. We've had a good opportunity for some of our leadership team. My colleague on the commission, the vice chair, is here as well. And we've seen a lot of folks we haven't seen in person for some time.
So sure. It's great.
Sure.
So we just came out with our annual tribal government gaming magazine, and you did an article for us in there about the current state of the NIGC, and thank you for doing that. It's an excellent piece. We also did a history of the NIGC, and also the 35th anniversary of the Cabazon decision. So all these things came into play in the magazine, and I'm just very proud of the content of the magazine. What does it mean to you to have the role leading this agency that really was born in those days?
Well, first, thank you for that article opportunity, and thank you for the scope of what you covered in that magazine, this edition. It's a really important history, and it influences so many parts of where the industry is going in the future. So
sure.
Thank you for that. But I think that any opportunity for public service is a opportunity to be part of a bigger mission.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the mission for the National Indian Gaming Commission and the broader regulatory community is an important mission, and I think that I see that every day with the staff at NIGC, whether sure. in the regions or the headquarters, dedicating their subject matter expertise and talent towards this mission is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good opportunity for the community to be able to have such a strong mission.
Sure.
And I take that really honored to have that role that I can play.
Mm-hmm.
I think that public service also presents an opportunity for servant leadership in many ways. And so I think that's also an honor for all of us who work in that type of a role.
Sure, sure. Great. One of the stories we have in the magazine is pretty much a history of the NIGC. This idea was given to me by Jana McCaig, who was one of the original commissioners back in the early 90s there.
Mm-hmm.
She had some great stories, and hopefully people will read it about how difficult it was in those days. They didn't have offices on their own, and there wasn't a lot of respect either from the government side or the tribal side.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that has changed down through the years. Why has it changed so dramatically?
Well, I'm not an agency historian per se, but I do know that at that time it was establishing a new framework.
Mm-hmm.
The industry was already in place, and integrating the new framework into how the industry operated
mm-hmm.
Presented its own challenges and growing pains. And the early commission should absolutely be commended for the work that they've done to set a tone and set a path.
Mm-hmm.
I know that over the course of the agency, the opportunity to collaborate as part of a bigger regulatory community with tribes and with operations and other stakeholders, I think has added to the success of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped to implement interpret a more consistent and predictable implementation of policy objectives that IGRA laid out,
mm-hmm.
which I think has also contributed to its growth and the role it plays today.
Sure. Well, I've had the honor, actually, of interviewing every chairman of the commission since its inception in the 90s, and there's been some amazing people, leading this commission, including yourself. Does it humble you a little bit to know these trailblazers that went before you?
Yeah, there's absolutely strong talent, and
mm-hmm.
I feel really honored to be able to, to have the opportunity to see this perspective.
Sure.
And I know that even in our day-to-day work, we regularly look back to the interpretations and the roles that they've made. This during the pandemic, we looked a lot back to past commissioners' interpretations
mm-hmm.
of regulations and policies, and it
sure.
helped to shape it. And the forethought that they had to take on some of those issues has been very helpful
mm-hmm.
In the work we do today.
So the column you wrote, you announced a program called the 3 for 35 Project.
Yes.
What was the impetus behind that?
Sure. The agency's had a focus in four areas in
mm-hmm.
in recent years, and one of those areas is preparedness across the regulatory community.
Sure.
And the opportunity that exists to help prepare the regulatory workforce falls in line with that objective.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we, in doing this project, are looking at the opportunity to remind the public about the unique regulatory structure and the unique aspects of the Indian gaming industry mm-hmm. that were affirmed in the Cabazon case 35 years ago,
sure.
And also to try to facilitate a conversation across the regulatory community about our workforce and how to plan for the next 35 years. Mm-hmm. And so we've identified three areas of discussion that we want to use to help facilitate that conversation,
okay.
and looking at skill planning, mm-hmm. you know, what skills are regulatory bodies investing in
sure.
in order to prepare for the future, the always evolving industry from mm-hmm. a regulator's perspective, looking at strategic recruitment and, you know, whether it's a large community of a workforce that you're drawing from or a small rural community, maintaining continuity of operations is mm-hmm. an important role that the regulatory body, you know, must play. So
right.
how do they prepare for that, develop pipeline? And then finally, looking at knowledge retention, and as we grow and the industry matures and reaches different milestones, how do you incorporate the knowledge from past regulatory subject matter experts and, mm-hmm. and use that to build in the future?
Okay, great. So, you know, I've mentioned how the quality of the chairman and also the other commissioners, but the staff is really important too. I mean, you have people on the staff there that have been there almost from the beginning, and some long-serving dedicated public servants there. How are you going to replace them when they get come times to retire?
No, absolutely. I think maintaining that continuity of operations is important. I think being strategic and thoughtful about how we are training up mm-hmm. Subject matter experts within any organization, but within ours, we've made that a priority.
Right.
And really being thoughtful about where do we need to acquire new expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, technology has been a strong investment area for us in recent years,
right.
and getting on individuals who can help us to remain relevant in the regulatory community
right.
has been important. But also as we whenever we're, you know, moving forward, we want to make sure that we're consistent and predictable,
mm-hmm.
but we also want to make sure that we're doing it from a place of knowledge from
sure.
what we've done before.
Sure. Right,
so involving a broad group in those decisions is really important. And you're
sure.
right, it's a very talented staff and mm-hmm. dedicated to using their talents to for a good mission.
Right. And they have institutional knowledge of what's gone on before as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, NIGC is known for doing tribal consultations. You know, I followed Chairman Hogan when he was in, you know, he did a bunch of them around the country, and I followed him for a few times there. So, how do you use tribal consultation about the, you know, finding out what the real issues are in tribal government gaming?
Oh, absolutely. We have one of the four, in addition to preparedness across the regulatory community. Another focus area for us has been in the area of being innovative and outreach and collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Consultation is one aspect of that. It's
sure.
an important aspect, not just for good decision making, but it's also important because it is a way to develop and cultivate the governmental authorities and be aware of those authorities that are so important to the federal-tribal relationship.
Right.
And that's a unique responsibility that, you know, every federal actor, you know, has.
Sure.
The way that we've approached consultation has been a little bit innovative during the last year and a half.
Right, you had to be innovative.
Yeah, exactly. And we built on a lot of the virtual tools. And for the first time ever, mm-hmm. the agency had all virtual platforms for our dialogue with tribes.
Okay.
We also really tried to use our website and other ways mm-hmm. to kind of get and collect information and perspectives from tribes.
Right.
And we also, because of the length of time since we last consulted with tribes, tried to organize the information. We consulted on 17 different topics, and so we organized into sort of three series of consultations.
Sure.
And by doing that, we're hoping to sort of help tribes to marshal their resources and their subject matter experts. So we've done that as one way to you know, have pointed conversations on very specific potential actions, but
mm-hmm.
also to have sort of broader discussions about emerging areas. Like technology and like ways to be more efficient in our decision-making processes.
Sure.
So I think from out of those, the next steps that'll come are going to be diverse, and some of them might require further discussion, and some of them might be ready for next steps and action items.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely, consultation is important to that. Looking at other ways to be collaborative that may not rise to the formality of consultation has been important to us too, and we've tried to establish some new platforms for that.
Sure.
You know, for the first time, we're doing summer summits with
mm-hmm.
the regions. The last year, we're going to include that again this year to have a regional perspective to influence the national NIGC agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We've also engaged tribes in our budget development process to make us more forward-looking, and have made that institutional part for the last 2 years, and we're doing that again this summer as part of that process. So, and using these virtual tools to kind of communicate our current state of operations is important too. So we're using all of those to make sure that we're responsive and being informed. But that is a primary goal of consultation, is to make sure that we have an awareness of the impact that a potential action is going to have.
Sure. And the tribes have responded to this?
I think so. I think we have in our virtual format, which is, you know, different and, and new for the way that we've been conducting these, we've had a strong, and in some cases stronger than in-person and broader feedback on that.
Sure.
And I think that it's been a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Great. So obviously, you know, your agency has a lot of contact with the tribal gaming commissions. And, you know, just knowing the public side more than the tribal side, the public side, most of the time somebody comes onto a gaming commission, they don't really know a lot about gaming to begin with. So how do you participate in you know, informing them on how gaming works and what the regulatory process is at the federal level?
Sure. Well, we have, during the past 2 years especially, really expanded the reach of our training program, which is the primary way that, you know, the NIGC meets its responsibilities under IGRA to provide technical assistance.
Sure.
And we've not only used virtual tools that have come about because of the pandemic and trying to be mindful of budgets and other uncertainty restrictions on tribes, we've also looked at streamlining the content of the courses we're offering in that area, and we've looked at making them more case study interactive based. And because of that, we've been able to be more cost effective, more accessible, and average, you know, a much broader turnout. Using those tools to educate and to outreach is one important aspect of that. Our compliance division and particularly the regional office is another important aspect of that. And we have had really worked hard on trying to elevate the level and the role of the regional directors in maintaining that local level contact.
Sure.
We did that quite a bit through the pandemic, and I think that's one way where we make that initial outreach and we target communities, particularly if they're rural communities, and trying to achieve that connection and develop that relationship.
Sure, sure. So how do you find the regional directors, basically? Obviously, these people have to have knowledge of the regulatory process as well, and knowledge of gaming on top of that. Are these people that you promote from within, or do you go outside and hire maybe former tribal commissioners?
A little bit of both. Yeah. I think it's definitely a position that benefits from having an understanding of the NIGC structure.
Right.
But we also have regional directors, you know, in the past that have come from outside and brought some really valuable perspectives. Mm-hmm. I think there's a really important aspect of the role they play is to be strong communicators and diplomatic and have an understanding of the position's role in helping to communicate the NIGC's unique responsibilities and also in informing the NIGC's national agenda and helping to bring tribes from their region, their unique needs to the table. So through summits, it's been important. We've also, in the last 2 years, made it a priority to involve them in reviewing some of the decision-making, whether it's ordinances or management contract reviews that the chair does.
Right.
Bringing that regional director perspective to the decision-making process has also been really important. But they're very valuable, really talented parts of the team.
Sure, I understand. So another aspect of the NIGC is a law enforcement aspect. You know, whenever there's something wrong in a tribal casino, you guys have to come in and figure out what's going on. So how does that work? If you get a report that something's amiss in one of the casinos, do you send out investigators?
We have, any actionable information, you know, we respond to.
Right.
We also, within the statute, have a responsibility to refer matters to law enforcement. And
sure.
So developing and maintaining those interagency relationships with law enforcement, whether at Treasury or the Department of Justice or within the FBI there, are really important parts of what we do.
Sure.
So we have those relationships. We have, within our compliance team, a real diversity of backgrounds and expertise. Former law enforcement officials and auditors and individuals from state regulatory bodies, as well as individuals from tribal regulatory bodies. So that all helps in developing that network with the law enforcement community to make sure we're responding and following up.
I know in the past some of the commissioners have had law enforcement backgrounds as well. I mean, that must be a great assistance in that case.
Absolutely. Commissioner Choney was one who came from with having a strong background and others. I think it's particularly helpful that we've been able in the past to develop strong relationships with these federal agencies. In the area of of cybersecurity has been one in particular that we're focused on, where there's a lot of not just subject matter expertise, but other opportunities to develop outreach and compliance and help in that area as well.
Sure. So the NIGC's relationship with Interior has always been kind of a arm's length, I guess I would say. But in this case, we now have the first Secretary of the Interior who's a Native American woman. We've got the head of the BIA who's a former leader of a tribe in Michigan. I mean, this must make it a little easier for the NIGC to communicate with Interior, or does that make a difference at all?
Sure. Well, I mean, my experience is in 2015, I was first appointed by then Secretary of Interior Jewell to the commission. And so during the last three administrations that I have been on the commission, I think that there is, during that time, a good relationship, particularly at the staff level, between the Interior and the NIGC.
Right.
It's important that, decision making is legally defensible, so having those lines of communication is particularly important, and I think that's one where there's been a lot of growth and strength in that area. We also, in terms of what the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act anticipated, are an independent investigatory authority, and so I think there's always been a respect for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, it's a terrific thing that these two leaders are in these positions because of the perspectives that they bring.
Sure.
In terms of implementation of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act's framework and the unique responsibilities that lie with Interior, it's important that there's predictability and there's consistency, but it's also important that it's responsive. And the skills that they have as tribal advocates is invaluable in that area, to understand what the needs are emerging and how they have been handled in the past is extremely important. Their dedication and commitment as Native people active in their communities is a very exciting thing as well. And their perspective as lawmakers, whether as a state lawmaker, a federal lawmaker, a tribal lawmaker, it's important for the regulatory community to have an understanding of how lawmakers identify and interpret and set out those policy objectives. And that provides the framework for the regulatory community to understand and interpret its role.
Mm-hmm.
So having that perspective, while not necessarily directly relate to it contributes to the overall benefit of the regulatory framework for IGRA. So it's exciting thing, and they're great individuals.
Yeah, no question. There's a couple of tribes in California that are either landless right now, or they're moving their casino from their remote reservation to a more populated area. Do you have any role when they do that?
The land determinations, I think, are matters for Interior.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's legal analysis,
the
legal staff work together to look at those issues.
Mm-hmm. And Compact says that's under the purview of the BIA.
Absolutely. That's definitely a role that I think IGRA anticipates that the Secretary's role, and that's not, I know that they're consulting on the regulations there, and I think that's a great opportunity for tribes to weigh in that process, but it's not in the approval process. We do not have a role.
Okay, great. So your term is expiring later this year. What would you like to, be reappointed, or are you ready for your next challenge?
Well, I know that, I started as chairman in January 2020 for the three-year term,
right.
And pretty soon after that, our focus was on responding to the pandemic and both internal with our operations and trying to meet our responsibilities externally as a regulatory body. I haven't thought beyond, my term right now, and so just focused on moving forward with our projects, particularly in our four focus areas, seeing a lot of opportunity for promoting this message of the importance of the regulatory workforce developing these technology improvements that I think are a great opportunity for the industry and the regulatory community to play a role in articulating what risks and what opportunities exist in the cybersecurity space is a good opportunity for the regulatory community.
Great. So what would you like to get accomplished really before the end of your term?
Well, I think looking at more at developing next steps in those areas, workforce and technology. I think also looking at the opportunity to institutionalize and promote the way that we have been doing outreach, those platforms I talked about, and I think that will you know, help to serve the mission, you know, for the agency in the future. So right. Those are, I think, important things that we can get done.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I think you've done a great job. You know, it's a difficult job. People don't realize how many balls you have in the air at all times, because you know, you have the regulatory role, you have the law enforcement role, and then the communication with all the different tribes around the country. That must be very difficult. How have you found that to be in terms of you know, the responsiveness of your agency to the tribes?
Well, we work hard to be as responsive as possible. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, talking about those pillars of the work that we do, agency accountability is one thing that right. We worked really hard on, making a focus area of being efficient in responding and meeting our responsibilities and being clear about what roles we do have and what roles we don't have. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's an important thing, that during the pandemic, as a, you know, working remotely, and we found some ways to be more efficient in those areas and sure. Try to anticipate things. And found new ways to kind of communicate. But mm-hmm. I think it's always can be an exciting thing, and it kind of invigorates our agency when we do get a chance to whether it's through site visits, whether it's through outreach like we're doing here, whether it's through other types of our training and the technical assistance that we provide. There are great opportunities to really improve how we do things by sure. Learning from what's going on mm-hmm. And also communicate what our goals are and look for that collaboration.
Great. Well, Chairman, thanks for taking the time. It's really good to catch up with you, and especially in person. We did this virtually last time,
yes.
And I much prefer the in-person experience. So thanks for taking the time, and good luck at the rest of the show.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to see you, too.